Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now, Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
And good morning. Welcome to Sports on a Sunday here on KMOX. It's a tradition heard each Sunday morning here in the city of St. Louis. I am Mike Kelly. James O'Sullivan is our board operator. We're with you today until 12 o'clock. Coming up in our next segment, we begin the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show, our weekly visit with the Cardinals skipper. Coming up in hour number two, we will hear from Kyle McClellan, Rob Fisher, formerly of St. Louis, now with Memphis, working for the Grizzlies. We'll talk about the NBA draft, and are the Grizzlies interested in perhaps taking Michael Porter Jr.? Of course, a lot of mystique or intrigue, if you will, about Michael Porter Jr. because of not only the injury, but also the hip injury that was suffered just about a week ago. John Mozeliak, the Cardinals president of baseball operation, will join me at 11:30, and we'll talk U.S. Open golf with Dan Reardon coming up at 11:46. Also at the end of this hour, after we visit with Mike Matheny, we'll talk World Cup soccer with our friend Bill McDermott, Mr. Soccer indeed. Well, let's go to the highlights from yesterday. The Cardinals scored, or the Cubs, I should say, scored four unanswered runs. They beat the Cardinals 6-3, handing St. Louis its fourth consecutive loss. Marcell Ozuna gave the Redbirds the early lead.
Here comes the 2-1 pitch from Hendricks to Ozuna. Swing and a long fly ball in the right center. Get up, baby. Get up. Get up. Get up. Oh, yeah. 2-0 Redbirds as Ozuna goes deep again, his 10th of the year. A two-run shot to give the Cardinals the lead here in the first inning. He touches them all for the 10th time this year.
In the third, Wilson Contreras brought home Chicago's first run.
Rizzo goes from first. The pitch, a swing and a ground ball that goes off Carpenter's hand. The throw goes behind the runner at first and backed up by Martinez in foul territory. A run scores. It's 2-1 Cardinals as Zobrist crossed as the plate. The ball took a hop. Carpenter tried to knock it down with a bare hand and couldn't control it.
In the fourth, Addison Russell did this.
Here's a long drive into center field. Russell hits it back to the wall, up on the batter's eye for a home run. Addison Russell hits the first pitch of the fourth inning out of the park, tying the game at two.
In the fourth inning, Carlos Martinez helped his cause.
Hendricks pitch. Martinez swings, loops it to right field. Here comes Hayward, and he can't make the catch. The ball goes off his glove. The Cardinals get the go-ahead run. Munoz goes to third and makes it safely. Carlos Martinez drives in Fowler, 3-2 Cardinals.
But in the top of the fifth, Kyle Schwarber did this.
Swing and a shot to center field, a base hit. The run's going to score. We have a tie game, and the guy goes to third. The throw over there is too late. And down to second base goes the runner. So an RBI base hit scores Bryant, who had walked. And now it's second and third. And only one out.
Martinez.
And a tie game.
Martinez last just five. He allows those three runs. In the sixth, the Cardinal rally cut short. A leadoff single by Dexter Fowler. Jairo Munoz was next.
Swing and a line drive to left field is a base hit. First and second for the Cardinals. Uh-oh, they throw behind the runner. Now he's in the hot box. He's out at third base. Bad, bad, bad base running by Fowler. What the heck's going on? It's a single, and then the play goes from the left fielder to the second baseman to the third baseman.
In the seventh, Sam Tuivalala faced Ian Happ.
The 1-2 pitch for Happ. A line drive to the right field corner. That's going to get one in for sure. The ball's down, rolling around. Fowler brings the ball into Colton Wong. A stop sign at third for Schwarber. It's an RBI double for Happ, and the Cubs lead 4-3.
Then in the eighth, Jason Hayward did something that no one has done this season against Jordan Hicks.
Bunner, swing away here.
He'll swing away, I believe. The pitch, swing indeed, ooh, and a long one out of here in right center field. Hayward hits a home run over the Cardinal bullpen, and the Cubs lead 6-3.
First home run allowed by Hicks in 32 appearances this season, 6-3. The final, Jack Flaherty gets the start later tonight. Pittsburgh beat Cincinnati 6-2 to get back to the 500 mark. Zach Eflin held the Brewers to one run on three hits over five innings of work. Philadelphia beat Milwaukee 4-1. It was Atlanta 1, San Diego nothing. The Dodgers beat San Francisco 3-1 on Kiki Hernandez's two-run homer. Mets beat Arizona 5-1. In the American League, it was the Yankees over Tampa Bay 4-1. The Yankees have won 13 of their last 16. Detroit beat the White Sox 7-5. Houston's won 10 straight. They put 10 on Kansas City to win 10-2. Steven Piscotty's two-run single. The difference is Oakland beat the Angels 6-4. Minnesota 9, Cleveland 3. Wade LeBlanc allowed just two hits while striking out 9 7 2/3. He retired 22 straight after Mookie Betts led off the game with a single as Seattle blanks Boston 1-0. Seattle trails Houston by a half game. Interleague play, Miami 5, Baltimore 4. Texas 5, Colorado 2, and Toronto 2, Washington nothing. So on this Father's Day, here's a look at the standings in Major League Baseball. In the central of the National League, Milwaukee leads the Cubs by one half game, the Cardinals 5 back. In the East, the Braves lead the Nationals by 2.5. In the West, Arizona has a 1.5 game lead over the Dodgers. In the central, in the American League, Cleveland over Detroit by 2.5. In the East, the Yankees lead Boston by a game. And in the West, Houston holds a 1.5 game lead over Seattle. Final pairing at the U.S. Open today will feature Daniel Berger and Tony Finau, who started the weekend 11 shots out of the lead. They'll go off in the final pairing. In front of them, it'll be Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. The USGA promises better results today at Shinnecock Hills after they applied a lot of water on the golf course yesterday. Couple of World Cup games being played so far. Meanwhile, Germany and Mexico are just underway, scoreless. Serbia beat Costa Rica 1-0. Later, Brazil and Switzerland. I'm Mike Kelly. Those are the headlines of the day. It's just about 12 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is Sports on a Sunday. We'll begin the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show up next on KMOX.
Welcome to the Saipaw GM Power Mike Matheny Show on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
16 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, I'm Mike Kelly. Welcome in to the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show. Heard every Sunday morning here on News Radio 1120 KMOX. The Cardinals close out the homestand and the series with the Cubs later tonight. Jack Flaherty gets the start. Jose Quintana will start for Chicago. The Cardinals drop their fourth consecutive game as they lose 6-3 last night. Redbirds 36-32 on the season. Let's bring into the conversation the Cardinals skipper. First of all, good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning with a night game tonight. How are you today?
Doing good, Mike. Thanks.
Good. Glad to hear that, and happy Father's Day. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Let's talk about Carlos Martinez. You thought he was better last night, didn't you? Explain in what areas you thought he was better.
Well, his stuff looked right from the beginning. He matched up, I think, his release point. That's that part of that feel that we always talk about. And thought he did a nice job of establishing the fastball, but came out with some purpose, came out with some intention right from the beginning. And you're going to have times when you're just not finding the zone like you want to. I thought he had closer misses.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he had a good feel for the slider and came out and it was a step in the right direction, without question.
Yeah, step in the right direction. His third start since coming off of the DL. Afterwards, he said he's still trying to find a little bit of consistency with that two-seam and the cutter, Mike.
I mean, I think what he's trying to do is make pitches on the corners when he has so much movement, and it varies so much for him from start to start. And when you're trying to hit corners with a ball that's moving as much as it is, whether it's to the third base side with the sink or to the first base side with the cut, it's running just off the plate. Now, there were some borderline, but we've seen that in the last couple of starts. Had some worked into some deep counts, and he was hoping to maybe get some calls and probably some calls that could go either way. But he was putting himself in position when you get deep in those counts that it could go either way, and then running him into some free bases. And that was 5 this time, 7 last time. I mean, both of that's it's too many. But it was, once again, the stuff looked right. He looked better, and it's just one of those that we can't wait to watch him get locked in because we know what that looks like.
Yeah, he's allowed 10 runs in the last 12 and two-thirds innings pitched. 98 pitches last night, and his last two were really good. 98 miles an hour on both, one up in the zone on the corner, outside corner, the second one or the last one down in the zone on the lower part of the outside part of the plate.
Well, and you could tell when he wanted to reach back, and he had a little bit more. But that's that fine line that is Carlos Martinez, where he could reach back and light up the gun every single pitch, but he's learned that it's the movement combined with the velocity and what's that sweet spot. And I think he's been searching for that, and he's toying around a little bit with taking a little more velocity off, trying to get more movement, and then movement into the bottom of the zone. But yesterday when he needed to get a strikeout, he reached back and threw four seamers high in the zone. He was able to use the slider on both sides of the plate. The cutter was pretty effective. It had a lot of run, and the sinker had a lot of movement. And it's just getting, and that's part of when you're on the DL, you don't have the ability to keep making those fine-tuned pitches, even though you're healthy. It takes a little while to get to that release point that lets you hit the corners when you need to hit the corners.
Marcelo Ozuna ran his hitting streak now, extended it to 9 games, gives you the early lead with a 416-foot shot off of Kyle Hendricks for his 7th home run this month.
Just not surprised. I mean, that's the guy that we knew we were going to get, and it was, talk about like Carlos's timing of being able to find the feel for that fine-tuned movement, and you look at Ozuna, you could tell he was so close. He was hitting the ball hard. He just wasn't able to get that little bit of difference in the timing to get the ball out in front and to get a little backspin. And, when he hit that ball yesterday, I thought, this is nice. It's going to be a double. Then just watch how he gets the backspin and how he gets the carry. And that's what allows some of these guys to hit the high number of home runs, which Marcel will end up doing this.
Yeah, starting to lift the ball. He said afterwards, too, that he's about 80% right now in terms of where he thinks he will eventually be. 80% still pretty good with this guy.
Yeah, can't wait to see 100.
that's what I was thinking.
And he just continue to watch him all the way around. Just the way he goes about the game, he's been a great shot in the arm for our organization and for this team. And he's going to have a big year. And I think it's going to be somebody that our guys are going to be able to rally around. We're going to put guys on base in front of him. We're going to have some other guys that, like we've had, be able to get behind him and drive in extra runs when he's getting pitched around.
Yeah, he's had 7 consecutive games in which he's delivered an RBI. He's the first Cardinal to do so since Matt Holliday back in 2013. Had an opportunity in the 6th with the game tied at 3. Dexter Fowler, though, thrown out, caught between 2nd and 3rd. Schwarber fields as Jairo Munoz single to left. He was able to throw behind Fowler. You could have been 1st and 2nd with nobody out. That's just really, really difficult base running, isn't it?
Yeah, that's putting yourself into a tough spot. And we're always talking about putting pressure on the defense and making them make a play. But in that particular situation, just knowing the game where we were, having Colton Wong up next, which most likely would have been a bunting situation, mm-hmm. and we're sitting with 2nd and 3rd. But we want the guys to be aggressive. That's that fine line, right, Mike? We're always talking about not holding back the throttle and looking for ways to make plays. But it's always smart base running. Hard for the first one, and then after that, we need to be thinking through the game situation. We need to be thinking through where guys are. And part of that is knowing that they have a left fielder that hasn't been in left field very long and maybe making him have some pressure by making a hard turn. And then next thing you know, you get caught off a little bit too far and ended up being a situation that didn't work out for us.
Well, and giving him the benefit of the doubt, he must have thought that he saw something, because when he made the turn, there was just a little bit of hesitation before then he tried to make the break to 3rd.
Yeah, and there's sometimes, that can be a play where guys use. They try and draw a throw behind them. I've had that a lot even as a catcher, where I'd be aggressive, come up and try to make a pick off at 2nd base, and as soon as the base runner saw me come up, he was already going to commit to 3rd because it's a long throw. If you think the guy doesn't necessarily have the arm to make up and then that you have the foot speed to be able to outrun the ball, it's a play that has worked, but in that particular situation, it just didn't work out right for us.
Cubs took the lead for good, scoring 4 unanswered runs, but they take the lead in the 5th inning. Sam Tuivasa gives up an RBI double to Ian Happ. Zobrist had reached prior to that on a Jairo Munoz throw, which was low to 1st after trying to backhand a ground ball. That just was one of those throws you hope that he makes, correct?
Well, you hope that he makes, or you hope that it's picked, and both of them were, you know, they weren't just average plays. It would have taken a very good play to make it, but mm-hmm. I know that that's a play that Munoz can make, and I know Carp has done a real nice job at first base, and he's hoping to come up with the ball on that end as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In the ninth inning, you asked, speaking of Carp, you asked for a review on a ball popped towards Ports Bryant at third. What did you think you saw from the dugout?
I saw something that was too close for us to tell and probably too close for even the umpire to tell. But it's reviewable since it's beyond the bag and beyond the umpire. And, you know, obviously that's a big situation where we'll have two guys on and a run in. And I think if that ball is called fair on the field, I don't think there's enough to review to change it. And it's something we have to take a shot at. But, you know, unfortunately, it was with it hitting the glove and not being able to just go straight down and hit the ground, we have no way of knowing, and there wasn't really an angle from any camera that would be able to tell us any different.
Let's go back to the eighth inning. Jordan Hicks did something that he hasn't done in 35 innings of work and 32 appearances in the season. He finally gave up a home run.
Yeah, and just kind of the conversation with him yesterday is, listen, it's going to happen in this game. And, you know, you could tell he was frustrated. He came out throwing some mad balls after that. But he's been so good for us. One of those guys that we were hopeful of what he'd bring to our club. But he's been that and so much more. And every once in a while, you're going to have to tip your cap. But we know that if he keeps doing what he's been doing, he's going to have a lot of success in this game for a long time.
That's Mike Matheny. I'm Mike Kelly. It's 25 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. This is the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show. Heard every Sunday morning on your Voice of the Cardinals, News Radio 1120 KMOX. We're going to take a break. More with the Cardinals managers up next after this.
Welcome back to the Saipaw GM Power Mike Matheny Show on your Voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
10:30 in St. Louis. I'm Mike Kelly. This is the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show. Cardinals close out the series against the Cubs in the homestand later tonight at Busch Stadium. Well, Mike, it is Father's Day. Share with us a memory of growing up in Ohio and the influences, the many influences that your father had on your life.
Well, my dad was an impressive guy. He was always very quiet, just a hardworking construction worker. But he loved myself and my three brothers, and anything that we were into, he was going to support as much as he could. And it was amazing. You know, and during baseball season, he was working 6-12-hour days and out in the sun all day. But he made it to everything that we did. And I don't know how he made it work, because it was a lot of traveling from different job sites to catch up to where we were playing. But the weekend, I know it was beyond what we were able to do, but he still made sure that we were able to continue to chase dreams that we had. And myself and my brothers each kind of had different dreams, but my parents were amazing how they supported that. But it always has influenced the way that I go trying to raise our kids, is, you know, not putting necessarily the pressure to achieve or do anything beyond what they want to. And my parents were that silent source of support for me. I knew they were there. I didn't hear them yelling and screaming, but I knew they were there. And afterwards, it was always something they were just proud that we were out doing what we could do as long as we were giving our best. And, you know, he was a hardworking man, and he expected us to go about it the right way. That was the one thing, is make sure that you're being respectful in how you're competing and also how you're preparing. And then after that, just kind of let the chips fall how they're going
to
fall.
Was he able to be in the stands when you made your major league debut?
He was. They made their way up to Milwaukee when I was brought up in 94, and that was a big day. And I truly did have a sense of how important it was to them as well. And so my brothers and my parents were all there, and I knew that was a huge accomplishment. And I think sometimes we forget how much is sacrificed in so many different ways. And we talk about this with the guys in spring training about how many different people have invested into these guys. No matter if they did a great job of it or not, every one of us have been invested into at some point. And to make sure that we have a sense of gratitude for what was given to us to be able to help us to get to the point where we are.
Yeah, no question. All right, so we're midway through June now. Your team's four games over the 500 mark, five games behind Chicago. And yet you really, I think you got to feel that you haven't had a chance to really see what this thing's all about because you haven't had a full roster throughout the start of the entire season so far.
I feel like even when we've had a full roster, we haven't been the team that we're going to be. And I know that's how the guys feel as well. It's almost like, well, we're just searching to find out when that's all going to come together. And part of that will be health driven, where mm-hmm. we get all our pieces back. But the other part is when you start seeing whether it's the bullpen really start to mold and shape and guys taking over roles, or whether it's having that kind of offense that's just relentless. And when we get everyone locked in, or large groups of guys, more than just one person at a time. And that's something we haven't really had for an extended period of time. And we're still right there in striking distance of every team in the league. And that's encouraging, but it's also something that we know there's an urgency. There's an urgency today. Let's find this. Let's get this right. Let's go on that roll and show ourselves as much as show everybody else the kind of team that we can be.
You've been without your starting shortstop for a month. Paul DeJong, though, now returning to some baseball activity, starting to hit off a tee. He's getting closer. You liking what you're seeing?
Yeah, and we keep it arm's length when the guys are getting close like that, because we know that us pushing them doesn't necessarily help. It can actually hinder their progress. And so Paul will be with us in Philly, so just having him around. But he's been around and been watching, and you could tell he's ready to go. But that's first in the hands of the hand specialist, and then into our medical team's hands, and getting Paul ready will be just part of the process. But one of those pieces that you're excited to get back, as always, but you're still in the meanwhile. Realize that we got some guys that can help us, like Jairo Munoz has, though, so far.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about just an evaluation of his body of work. 3-for-4 last night, the average now up to .268. He's got 3 home runs and 13 RBIs on both from an offensive and defensive standpoint. Just evaluate what you've seen so far from this young guy.
Well, we didn't really have any idea what we were getting. We heard from our front office about some of the numbers and the projections of what we might get from Jairo. He obviously came into spring training and really opened our eyes, mostly with the bat. Mm-hmm. But we saw good range. We saw a plus arm that could play just about anywhere. He made our team purely out of versatility, being able to play the outfield, especially center, and being able to play the middle of the infield. I do believe that he could make the transition to third at some point in his career if he needed to. But he's got enough movement and quick twitch to be able to play shortstop. And I think he's made some nice plays. There have been some inconsistencies, but that's to be expected with every young player. But I think the at-bats have improved since day one. He's got a more mature approach to the game. He's got a better idea of what the league's trying to do to him and a better idea of his swing.
Tommy Pham's kind of quietly getting back right, if you will. I mean, a 10-game hitting streak now. He went 1-for-5 last night. It seems like he's starting to get back to where he was earlier in the season.
Yeah, and he's a guy that we kind of jumped on his shoulders early on. We talked about how different guys have maybe carried us for certain periods of time, and Tommy certainly did his share of carrying the heavy load. But getting him right, and right when he's in the middle of that lineup, is a key part for our offense, just like we talked about with Karp getting going at the top. But Tommy's a dangerous hitter, and we saw the home run a couple nights ago. We're seeing him start to stay through the middle of the field. He looks like he's seeing the ball a little better. It looks like he's figured out a couple things mechanically. He even told me before the game yesterday he thinks he found something very small that was keeping him from staying back like he needed to. But he's one of those guys, when he gets hot, you've seen it, and we all have, that it can be a big difference maker.
Let's a couple more questions for Mike Matheny in this segment of the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show, heard every Sunday morning here on KMOX. It's 10:37 in St. Louis. Friday night was one of those games that, as a team, you want to flush, and certainly Michael Wacha does too. As he lasted just 4 innings, allows 9 runs on 7 hits, he gives up 3 home runs, 4 walks in the game, and struck out just 2. He just wasn't his best night.
Those happen, and yeah. Unfortunately, every pitcher in the league's going to have a day like that. And Michael has been as good as anybody in the league. And in my conversation with him yesterday is, let's figure out maybe something to do the next time we come around for him to play pitch against the Cubs. But until that happens, you just get back on and do what you were doing up until that point, because the kind of season he has put together, was one of those that you just couldn't wait till he got on the mound, and I know he can't wait to get back out there.
Yeah, location was just something he struggled with, wasn't it?
It was, man, and they made him pay. And, you know, every pitcher is going to have pitchers that get to the middle of the plate. But the thing that Michael's had this season, especially with having more pitches, with being able to hit the top of the zone, using the curveball, using the cutter, typically that wide variety of pitches usually gets you gets by with a couple more mistakes because guys are more in between. But you're talking about a team in Chicago that just got shut down a couple days in a hitter-friendly park in Milwaukee, and they came out with an idea of being very aggressive, and they were aggressive on some pitches that got part of the plate that Michael didn't want them to.
Marcell Ozuna homers with one out in the fourth. That put an end to John Lester's string of 18 consecutive scoreless innings. Matt Carpenter also hit his ninth home run of the season. Meanwhile, you got Matt Bowman back on the roster. Got him back with the team, and he's made appearances in each of the last two games. First of all, nice to have that extra body, and in particular, Bowman, who's helped you in the past.
Yeah, he has, and it was nice to give him a little bit of break. We've worked him very hard, and you know, part of the evolution of a young pitcher, especially a guy who's kind of transferred into the bullpen, he was always a starter like most of the guys that get here. But learning how to limit that workload, and we're not just talking about the innings, it's how much throwing you're doing pregame, it's how much you're doing in your warm-ups. And Matt is one who always puts it, I mean, he's full throttle all the time. So trying to give him a little bit of a break there to get those blisters healed also. But he looked very good the last 2 days, and happy to have him back.
Hey, Mike, ideally, you know, you'd like to have your full complement of arms coming out of the pen, guys ready. And we know that that's been in flux through injury and for a variety of different reasons throughout, you know, this part of the season, up to this part of the season. What's ideally with Hicks the best way that you would like to use him?
Yeah, well, I think we're trying to do that.
Yeah.
I think there'll be some days when you can get two innings out of him. There's others when you realize you might need him for a full series. And so to be able to get him two out of the three means you're probably only going to be able to use him for one inning, especially if you have somebody that can fill in that sixth to seventh inning. I mean, those bridge innings are extremely important. That seems to be as much of a question for us as anything else. Sam Tui Villalo's taking steps in a positive direction. Really just one pitch yesterday. He got into a positive count. One pitch that we had all liked to have maybe a little lower in the zone that happened, ended up hitting. But up until that, Sam had been throwing the ball well. That would allow Jordan to stay just at an inning. But I think there'll be days when we want to stretch him just a bit, just for the progression of his career also. But he's been answering the bell consistently and staying strong. And we need him at the back end of the pen right now.
And everybody knows he's a former starter. So in terms of just a broad brush, I mean, are there total number of innings that maybe you have in mind for the season with him?
Well, I think we have to just do what we have to do to win at this point. But always in conversation with the front office on what that number should look like. And you know, the multiple inning idea was one that kind of helps towards that goal of getting his inning count up for an entire season. But we also understand that when you have two guys who have been kind of our staple with Bud Norris and Jordan Hicks at the back end, every time that you're pitching Bud or Hicks multiple innings, you realize it's going to be multiple days that you're not going to have them in the back end.
Right, no question. Mike, we're going to take a break. Our next segment of the Mike Matheny Show. We wrap things up coming up after this on KMOX.
Welcome back to the St. Paul GM Power Mike Matheny Show on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
Our final segment with the Cardinals manager on this Father's Day. The Cardinals play the Cubs later this evening. You'll hear it here on KMOX. Hey, Mike, I want to talk to you a couple of things, really three items that came out of this past week's owners meeting, the quarterly owners meetings in New York City. One of them, a topic that always is being discussed, is the DH. The AL has had it since 1973. Rob Manfred said that I think that there's continuing source of conversation among the ownership group and that I think that the dialogue actually probably moved a little bit. Okay, so should the National League have the designated hitter?
Yeah, that's heresy for National League purists. But you know, I think when you start looking at the bigger picture of what's the status of the game right now, and I know the commissioner is concerned about the lack of offense, and kind of some of the staggering rates of strikeouts, the low batting average, the time between ball put in play, with those things in conversation, you can see why adding one more legitimate bat in the lineup would make sense. I've always said this. I love the National League style of play. I do hate watching my pitchers walk up to the plate. That's about health as much as anything else. And we've seen, we watched two different starts that where we had to limit the number of pitches we allowed the starter to go, which is another topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. And I had to do it because not just because they were at bat, it was their turn to come at bat, but because they got on base and you could see they lost their legs once they got out there and had to run the bases for a while. I mean, those sort of things go into play when you start talking about where an all-time low for a number of pitchers that are even pitching to the seventh inning, or you're talking about how the game is using so many different pitchers throughout the game. A lot of that has to do with the restrictions that come to the pitchers because of their spot in the batting order.
Yeah, you're referencing Luke Weaver and Michael Wacha from a couple of previous starts, and let me give you another number. Major League pitchers right now, or National League pitchers, hitting just 112. In appearances at the plate so far. So obviously food for thought and a topic that continues to be discussed. The other thing that came up during the quarterly meetings was a discussion, and again, it has been discussed before, but on defensive shifts, and possibly should they come up with a rule to maybe make an illegal outlawing or an illegal defense rule, if you will. I don't know. Do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that. Once again, if you're talking about trying to figure out ways to improve what our offense looks like, we thought that the game would naturally shift to the point where the guys were starting to hit the ball the other way, but it's not the case. They're trying to hit it over the shift or through the shift, which is causing one more strikeouts, which is also causing the ball to be put in the air a lot. And I think it comes back to, and this has all been driven by information that the commissioner was able to get through our fan base of they want more action. They want mm-hmm. to see things happen and balls put in play instead of just walk strikeouts and even the home runs. So to put the ball in play, you're encouraging the left-handed hitter to go ahead and drive the ball through the right side when there's a wall there right now that doesn't allow a hit to happen. So I see how that would be advantageous, and I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Yeah, and the other thing that has been talked about is the possibility, looking towards the schedule in 2019, that you could see Albert Pujols and the Angels in town here in St. Louis in a game or in a series.
Well, I know St. Louis would I think, welcome Albert back at this point. You know, what an amazing career he's had. We were fortunate to watch so much of that here firsthand.
Yeah, no question. Jack Flaherty takes the mound, the 22-year-old right-hander he's right now second among National League rookie starters with an ERA with a 2.96 third and strikeout rate, and also 2.76 ERA since re-entering the rotation last month against Jose Quintana. Go get it done, get a win, and travel safe to Philadelphia. Happy Father's Day, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.
All right, Mike, thank you.
All right, thank you. That is Mike Matheny with the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show, heard every Sunday morning here on KMOX. The World Cup is underway, as you know. Bill McDermott is our soccer analyst. He is Mr. Soccer. Brought to you by Worldwide Technology, creating game-changing technology solutions. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Fine, Mike. How you been? Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Back at you as well. I've been fine. Big news of the week, the headline, of course, was that the World Cup is coming to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's always exciting.
Very much so, Mike. It's going to be tri-hosted, if you will, by Mexico, Canada, and the United States. And the thing that's really unique about the 2026 World Cup is that it's the first time there'll be 48 teams, 80 games, 60 of which will be in the United States, 10 in Canada, 10 in Mexico. The Secretary General, CEO of United States Soccer, Dan Flynn, spoke with me last evening, and he said the overall bid from the three countries really resonated with FIFA. And at the top of the list, why it did, Mike, neither of the three countries had to do anything structure-wise
right.
for stadiums. Everything is in place. And stadiums of fairly good capacity, minimum 60,000 going all the way up to 93, 95 if you play at the Rose Bowl. So everything was in place. And it is the right move for FIFA. The last time it was in, the only time in the United States, 1994, Mike, still the most successful World Cup in the history of the event dating back to 1930, an average attendance of 68,991. It was a remarkable event.
Well, and the other thing, too, people wonder, why not St. Louis? Why isn't St. Louis going to be able to host? Well, you mentioned it. The requirements for the stadium, we just don't have a venue available.
There is no venue available, Mike. However, the good news out of this, out of the overall scenario with the World Cup coming to the United States, St. Louis may, emphasis on may, be able to play at Park because the St. Louis Sports Commission and St. Louis University, as part of the overall bid, have made their proposal to be a potential site for teams to train, a team base, maybe one team or two teams, down at Herman Stadium. So that bodes well for St. Louis simply because of the geography, right in the middle of the country of the United States. No matter where the venues are, St. Louis is going to be somewhat convenient, and more upon which you get an excellent opportunity to really get an idea of what the World Cup atmosphere is all about when you have a different country playing at your city. Let me put it this way. The surface at Herman Stadium was good enough for Bosnia's national team, Chelsea, and Real Madrid, and you do not get two more picky teams, club teams, than Chelsea and Real Madrid. So the surface is just fine.
Is the MLS conversation in St. Louis completely dead?
Yes, sir. There's nothing that I would like to answer yes to more than that question. Yes to that question, but unfortunately, yeah, we had our chance, Mike. The vote was last April 4th, as a matter of fact, in 2017, and everything was in preparation. Everything was ready to go. You could have literally started building a stadium on April 5th the next day. But it wasn't meant to be, and consequently there are 26 teams now, with the most recent addition of Nashville and Cincinnati and Miami. There will be teams 27 and 28. St. Louis will not play a part in that, unfortunately. The odds on it looks to be Detroit and Sacramento, possibly to be teams 27 and 28. And then Don Garber, the commissioner, said that will be it. We will expand no further.
Okay, so action today. Serbia beats Costa Rica 1-0. Mexico, I believe, is up 1-0 against Germany. Some thoughts on what you've seen from early action at the World Cup this year.
Excellent. First 3 days of competition, Mike. And as you said, starting off today with Germany against Mexico, then Brazil against Switzerland, you get an idea to see the two of the favorite countries. But the competition, it just goes to show you that Portugal and Spain, they lived up to all the hype. But the thing about it is, even at this level, Mike, every game on Friday, Egypt, Uruguay, Morocco, Iran, Portugal, Spain, all decided by silly fouls on defenders in the last 5 minutes of the game, giving away free kicks, which the opposition scored on. Ronaldo's third, case in point. There's always that little innate hostility when a player from Barcelona plays a player for Real Madrid. Ronaldo's with Real Madrid. Gerard Piqué from Barcelona, he's a center back from Spain. He fouls Ronaldo. Ronaldo scores an impossible, inch-perfect free kick in the 88th minute to get a valuable point for Portugal playing against Spain. The games yesterday, Argentina being held to a tie by Iceland. They continue to be the story of this World Cup, of many past. Mike, there's 334,000 people in Iceland. 5 to 10% of the population is at Russia watching these games. So they continue to indeed be a story. And a story right now is the fact that you just pointed out that Mexico's leading Germany, the odds-on favorite, to be this year's World Cup champion.
Hey, buddy, thanks for your time. As always, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Anytime.
Bill McDermott. Brought to you by Worldwide Technology, creating game-changing technology solutions. I'm Mike Kelly. That does it for hour number one of Sports on a Sunday. When we return after the news from CBS and from KMOX, we'll hear from Kyle McClellan. We'll visit with Rob Fisher as we'll talk NBA basketball and the draft coming up. John Mozeliak joins us, as well as Dan Reardon, live from the U.S. Open. Stay with us. The news is next on KMOX. Hour number two, coming up on Sports on a Sunday.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.